Hey everyone, Corey Poirier here. Just checking in before you listen to this new episode of the show to let you know that my new book, The Enlightened Passenger, is now officially available to order. And you can jump over to thisisthebook.com today. And just by grabbing a copy, you'll actually get 5 uber cool, I'm saying they're uber cool, you get to decide that, free bonuses with the book. They are all listed on the site, but as an example, one is how to land your brand to talk, so training around that. Another is access to my Get Paid to Speak book. Also, top 10 insights guide, a training that has never aired before that I revealed about how to charge what you're worth versus what you would normally maybe charge. And then an exclusive training by a friend of our show who's a really big name, and it's around the idea of how to build the life of your dreams and the business of your dreams. So actually, those are the bonuses. So head over to thisisthebook.com today, grab your bonuses before the pre-order ends and or before the bonuses go away. Thanks everybody for checking the show out. And until next time, I'm Corey Poirier.
First of all, everybody, thank you so much for joining us today. Corey Poirier, happy to be back with the new and latest edition of the show. And I'm also excited to have a brand new and first-time guest with me today. We haven't had her before, but I know her enough to know she's going to over-deliver. So Julie Broad, so excited to have you here with us today. And Julie, where we start, which I know is different than almost any other show that you're going to be on, is we like to ask the guests to tell us a little bit about themselves versus me reading or pulling from some sort of bio. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself before we dive in a lot deeper?
Yeah, I'm Julie Broad. I'm the founder of Book Launchers, which is a full service self-publishing company helping you write, publish, and promote nonfiction books to grow your brand and your business. But I didn't start here. I am Canadian. I live in Las Vegas, but I am Canadian. And I started in real estate many years ago and published my first book in 2013 as a real estate investor.
Wow. And so I guess that brings up probably a good follow-up, I think, is what drew you into books? Like you said, you did it as a real estate investor. Was that experience enough that you realized the power of leveraging a book as an expert in a brand? Or was that nothing to do with it at all? And that just was a great byproduct?
Yeah. I mean, as a little girl, I thought I'd be a writer. And then people told me writers didn't make money. And I had a grade 10 teacher that, you know, really graded me hard. And I thought, not only am I not going to make money, but I'm not going to be good at it. So I went to business school instead. And I ended up investing in real estate. But it was through real estate investing that I actually started writing, because we had some crazy stories. I had a property that, you know, with a property manager that got charged with manslaughter. I had tenants pulling knives on each other. I did all the things that they teach you to do in the get rich quick courses, and it created all these wonderful stories. So I started writing about them, and I ended up getting approached by Wiley to publish a book. I didn't approach them. I didn't have an agent. You know, I didn't go through all those hoops, and they approached me, and I told them, yes, I've got this great idea. It's about this crack house. And they went, no, thank you. But we do have an idea we'd like to give you, and we'd like to work with you. And so we built a proposal together over 3 months, which is really unusual. And so here's this little girl inside of me that thought she was going to be a writer going, I'm going to be a writer. And at the end of 3 months, they wrote me a note that said they didn't think I could sell enough books to get a book deal.
Wow.
Right? They approached me, they gave me an idea, and then they shut me down.
So, before we go too far on that, I'm curious. So were they trying to pitch you to another publisher? Or they were saying within their own publishing entity, they didn't think you guys would sell enough books together to make it make sense. Is that
exactly? Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, because really publishers are looking at you to sell the books. You know, people think a publisher is going to sell the books for them, but they're giving you a deal because they think you're going to sell enough books for them to make their money. And so at the end of this, they decided, once they got into all my platform pieces, they didn't think I was going to sell enough books. But it was such a gift because I went back to the original idea. I didn't call it manslaughter in a crack house, even though that's what I thought that was my original idea. I called it More Than Cash Flow, but I went back to that original idea and I self-published. So I did exactly what I wanted. I self-published. I ended up taking it to number one in print books. So ahead of Dan Brown, ahead of Game of Thrones, I was in the top 100 print books for 200 days on Amazon. And it was all because of them, because if they hadn't have rejected me, I wouldn't have gone at this with such vengeance. Absolutely. And so it was great. And I saw the power. It grew our investment business. People I never met were calling me saying, I've got $250,000. Can I invest in your properties? And I had a training and education company that doubled in size in the 12 months after the book came out. So I saw the power of a great book and what it can do for businesses, but also it had impact. I was helping people avoid the problems that I had lived through because I'd followed these techniques to a T that I was taught to do, but it just created a lot of problems I wasn't prepared to live through.
Wow. So, I mean, there's a few things I'd like to unpack there because the author in me and the even so it took me a long time to kind of, I'll say, make peace with the author slash marketer in me. Because when I first thought, as I was younger, I was writing music, I poetry, not books, but I thought, same thing. I want to be an author someday, even though I hadn't read a book. I didn't read my first full book until to age 27. And yet I thought I was going to be a writer. And I told my mom that one time in my early 20s, and she said, I think you have to read one first. And so but I had this vision, but I thought of it as a writer. And then when I got older and let's say wiser, I realized it's an author. You know, you're the authority in the subject. And part of the responsibility of being that author is getting the book in people's hands. And I will say, I won't show too long, but like that's a glimpse of some of the people I'm outreaching to for my book launch. I did that quick so you can see. But on that one side of page, I bet you there's 70, probably conservatively, affiliates that I in the process of reaching out to some form or another about my book. And if somebody saw my marketing plan, their first reaction probably be, why isn't the publisher? Why don't they have this marketing plan? And I'd love to answer that. I don't know. But to your point, I think a lot of people, well, I know a lot of people think that the reason I need to get a book deal is because they're going to do the work for me. And from my experience now with two publishers, that ain't the case. Now they'll get, so what for me, so the question is, why do we go with a publisher then? For me, I look at the type of book. What's the end goal? There's a whole bunch of reasons. So I've self-published way more than I went with the publisher on. And I believe there's a good reason for all of them. Like I've self-published to grow my email list. I've self-published a series because I believed in the series and I want to raise impact for people. I've self-published to make money, like actually because I could sell books I knew in a series. But the reason that I brought this latest book to a publisher and one of my other books was because I believe firmly this book needs to be in stores. It needs to have a certain amount of an audience. Like it's a mass. If it makes it or not, that's the different question. But it's a book that should be a mass marketed book, and so it's a fictional parable, which is totally different than a nonfiction self-help. And so I felt it needed a publisher because if I want to do what I need to do with it, it needs to be in a in a Target, Barnes and Noble, Target, Amazon, Walmart. And that's a little easier to do, obviously, with a publisher. Now, these days, to get on the USA Today bestseller list, it's even harder now as a self-published author. New York Times is pretty close to impossible. And so there were reasons why I chose that. And I said all this to set the tone for people to understand that, to your point, Julie, is people think the publisher is going to make all that stuff go away. And my experience is it might even be more important that you understand you're doing the marketing because the publisher won't probably stick around with you and definitely won't sign another book if you don't do a good job of proving to them they were right when they thought to take a chance on you. So I just think it's important to talk about the fact of what you said is that you had to do the work. And at the same time, publishers aren't just sticking around waiting for to discover that new author. In fact, they're scared of that new author because they don't know they're going to sell any books. Would you agree with all that, by the way? That was a long summary.
Yeah, no, 100%. And the other thing is, you mentioned a couple reasons that you wrote that you self-published, and that the publishers have a very closed-minded, for lack of a better word, in many cases, view of what they're going to publish. And so, if you have a niche book, they're going to go, like the mass-marketed book to go in the bookstores is a great reason to go with a publisher, because as a self-published author, bookstores are risky. Because when they return the book, you're paying twice what you made on that book for those returns. So, if widespread bookstore distribution is important to you, you are better off to go to a publisher, but you have to have sell-through plan no matter what. You have to sell that through. So, yeah, everything you said, 100%. I was nodding the whole time.
I want to ask you if you're okay with a bit of the strategy behind stuff. I mean, I never know where I'm going to go, but obviously, it seems like a natural place is the book business because it's your world and I'm passionate about it. But what are your thoughts? Like, so I'm in this process right now. For example, I'm working on a street team right now. And it's funny when I've asked people if they want to be on the street team, it's funny. Some people are like, sure, what is that? Like, sometimes I forget to, I gloss over it. And I think the term, I don't know this for a fact, I probably have to look it up. I think the term came from back in the day with Hollywood and music. Like when you'd walk down the streets, there was people handing out flyers to try to get you to go see Motley Crue at a club instead of going to see Poison. And so the street team was the people on the street that were handing out. But now it seems weird to use that term, but we still seem to use it. But at the end of the day, for me, it's an army of love fans that are up for doing some form of helping you with the book launch, whether that's write a review, maybe know of shows that you can get on, or maybe buy a copy of the book or whatever that looks like. My question is, how important do you think street teams are, and do you work that into some of the stuff you do with self-published authors?
Yeah, we actually call it a book army. But yeah, it I think the first thing before anybody does that is think about who's in their network and bucket the people. And so because a lot of people will just do outreach and say, "Will you support my book?" And that's not specific enough. And there's going to be certain people who are going to be great for those early reviews. So they're, you know, they'll say they'll read the book and they'll be the first person when it launches to post that review. And that's a very important bucket of people. There's also people that will read the book and give you endorsements, which I know you've been really busy, you know, going out and getting endorsements for books. Those are people with influence that probably aren't even going to read the book, honestly. They're just going to endorse it because of who you are. They're going to say, you know, this is the book for this kind of person, or Corey is this kind of expert, pay attention. And that's another bucket. And then the other bucket is the people who will actually promote the book. And those are all people we want to be talking to before the book launches. When the book launches, then, you know, that's when we focus on the people who will buy the book. You can get the people buying the book in advance if you're going for a list. And this is where there's all kinds of strategies depending on what your bigger picture goal is. Because if you are going for that USA Today list, you probably want to have 3 months, excuse me, a pre-sale and be getting everybody to buy the book.
Now,
But
we're into
if
that timeline right now, in fact.
Exactly. So buy the book so that you can support getting on the list. But if you're not going for a list, which, you know, a lot of authors, there's really no reason to go for a list. You know, you've got different goals for your book, then these other buckets are important to kind of know in advance and understand what you're doing. So there are strategies for all of these things. And yes to the early people. And no matter what strategy you have, getting reviews is probably the single most important thing you do. So rallying people to be ready to write a review once your book launches is vital, because everything you do post-launch, people are going to go and check out your page and go, "There's only four reviews." Like, that's not
Yeah.
enough credibility.
Well, and you go look at a book like I think it was The Alchemist I looked at recently, but it might have been Four Agreements or Alchemist or one of them. And it's like 11,000 reviews.
Oh,
And it's
right.
like 4.5 out of 5. When you go see that, the social proof is done. It's like I heard Jerry Seinfeld said back in the day, one of his comedy specials, he said, McDonald's, like billions and billions served. Why are they still counting? Enough already. You've sold me. I'll buy one. You know, like I'll take one. You sold billions. And it's the same type of thing. I think, like, you go to that, you're thinking, I heard The Alchemist is a good book. And then you see 11,000 reviews and they're almost all 5 out of 5. And I think you're sold by that point. And so, to your point, that's how significant I think reviews can be. And so, I wanted to ask you a follow-up about reviews. The newest thing, I mean, everything, if I can say so, not everything, in every industry now, pay to play is becoming prominent. And so, the review business is, I don't think, any different. So now you can, for lack of a better way of saying it, buy legitimate reviews. So buy reviews that people are legitimately doing for you. And so my question is, what are your thoughts on that? And have you had experience with it? Like I get hit all the time now because I have a book coming out with, and I should have mentioned when I said I'm in that timeline, April 1st is actually our pre-order start date, but I'm in the timeline of getting it ready for that. But the review thing, you know, I get hit all the time with people saying, hey, come to our site and you can buy this many reviews for this much money. They're all legit reviews that we get through people that work for us, whether it's for free or not. What are your thoughts around that? Like, that, is that a bad thing? Is that a good thing? Does it hurt you on Amazon if they are legit reviews? Does that maybe make it okay? I know that's a lot in one question, but I just love to get your take on should you, because some people might not know the people to get the reviews from. Is it worth them buying the reviews if they have the money to do it?
There's risks, and so that's the challenge without knowing the company. So there's certain companies that do this and they follow the terms and conditions, and you know, you're in a pretty good position. Like, we run Goodreads giveaways, and so you're not paying for reviews, but you usually get reviews. We submit for NetGalley reviews, and those people often also submit their review onto Amazon. They're harsh reviewers, just FYI, if you go that route. They are like book lovers, so, and they give out the 5 out of 5s very sparingly. But you know, there's services like that that are completely legit. BookSprout, BookSirens, those are two other ones that we use, where you may or may not get the reviews. So you submit and they have reviewers, and you know, they'll submit very honest reviews. Some of these other services where they're guaranteeing you're going to get X number of reviews, my fear with using them, and I personally haven't used them because of this fear, because the Amazon bots are smart and they go through and they review, they will remove swaths of reviews. I just had 12 reviews disappear off my page. They're all legit. Like I don't do anything that is not, but they'll determine somehow that you're associated with them or something in the account or something in their IP address has triggered that they're not in their view, an arm's length review, and they're gone. And so these review sites, if they're seeing that the same IP address, as an example, has reviewed 300 books in the last 30 days, well, I can guarantee you at some point the bot is going to just remove them all. So what have you actually paid for? So I don't like to do that. I don't like to play games with the Amazon bot because they shut down accounts and trying to get your account back up is an absolute nightmare. And a lot of authors have lost their ability to actually go there because of these things. So I like to play on the very safe side personally.
Yeah, that's very fair. I remember there was a, and again, I don't know if they get any lenience because of their size, but I remember there was this group, and they've been around forever. I think they're called bookclub.org or book club, some online bookclub.org, I think. And they
Okay.
have like minions of reviewers, for lack of a better way of saying it. Like it's what it is. It's like a Goodreads. They're really big. Like
Yeah.
I think they get 2 million visitors a month. And anyway, they have reviewers that do it for free, so they're not even paying them, and they charge for reviews. And I wonder sometimes if they get any lenience because they have so many book lovers and readers, and they're all like, it's like a Goodreads almost. But at the same time, I get weary of doing it, and also would love to have that many reviews on the book. So it's like a catch 22. I mean, I think I'll have plenty because of the street team and the stuff I built on the front end anyway, but it just seems like it'd be a quick, easy fix. But sometimes a quick, easy fix, like you said, can ruin everything. And I'm with a publisher, so it could even hurt them. So I don't know. I just wanted to get your take on it because you hear, again, I get pitched on it all the time and you hear people using it, but I don't hear anybody saying it was the best thing I ever did or it went smooth. I don't hear positive or negative, but I usually worry because you think if it was such an easy service and all you have to do is pay and it's done, everybody be talking about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think everybody in the publishing industry has to be wary of anything that sounds easy or they say guaranteed. Dig a lot deeper because realistically, nothing's easy and there's very few guarantees, right? And whenever somebody guarantees something, I want to dig into, well, what does that mean? And my favorite one was a friend of mine paid, I think it was $10,000 to be an award-winning author. And what their guarantee was, they flew you into this award ceremony, they rolled out the red carpet, they put you on stage, and they handed you an award. And she's like, well, I was an award winner and I got the picture, it looks legit. And I'm like, okay, great. That's how they fulfilled the guarantee. And so I always want to know, how is this guarantee being fulfilled? Some companies guarantee airport bookstore distribution, but they've paid for the space. And that's totally fine because a lot of retail space is paid for. But I want to know that, right? Because I don't want to know that you're going to have somebody going airport to airport trying to sell my book because that might not guarantee my space. So how are you getting it in there? So I always want to know, where's that guarantee? And anytime somebody says something's easy, I probably just ignore them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And yeah, I mean, we have to recognize now more than ever, there is a lot of opportunities to do, as we've called the industry, pay to play. But that doesn't mean there's a lot of good opportunities. So like you have to really, I think, more than ever now, if you're going to put money behind it, you have to reconcile with, am I okay with this? Also, you have to say, is it legitimate? Like, there's a whole bunch, I think, and I guess the big one is it even the right audience? Like, somebody messaged me, I won't say the name because I don't want to disparage them. But at the same time, somebody messaged me just yesterday and said, Corey, this group who says we're the most prestigious, whatever, whatever, sent me a thing saying they want $1,400 to list me in their directory. Does this make sense? Or is this just a vanity advertising thing? And, I have to answer them honestly. And so, in this case, my answer honestly was the most I've heard about them in recent years, they used to be very prestigious. The most I've heard about them in recent years is people asking me, should they spend money with them? But I don't hear who the winners are. I don't hear who's listed. And I said, take that for what you will. But yeah, I mean, you can invest money and get in a really good spot, write for a really prestigious thing, get on a really big media and leverage it forever and get a return. But you also can just spend money after money after money. So I think you have to investigate it more than ever now, to your point.
Do you want to hear a funny story?
Sure. Happens now.
So, speaking of pay to play, so I needed my, because I'm in the green card process and I was submitting for my green card, and I needed what my lawyer called an explainer article. So he was like, you got to get in some sort of a prestigious media and have them write an article about like what Book Launchers is and how it originated. And I was like, well, okay. And so we tried pitching some places, but you're self-serving in this, so it doesn't tend to hit. And I got this email from somebody saying that they would get me in Inc. magazine, and all I had to do was pay, $900, and they'd write this article. So I was like, I need this. I'll do it. And I kind of in the back of my head, I'm like, this isn't. There's something wrong with this, but whatever. As long as it gets me this piece for my lawyer, so I did it. I sent it to my lawyer. He was happy. He's like, perfect. That's exactly what I needed. Green card got accepted. And then, it was like 3 months later, I'm like, did that ever get published? I wonder where it is. I found it, and it was The Ink Magazine, which is not Ink Magazine. And oh my gosh, does it look so cheap and so horrific? But yeah, so you got to be careful. And so now I see it all the time. When I get these pay-to-play submissions, you see it's, if you look quickly, you think it is the legitimate, like USA Today or whatever publication. But if you read a little closer, it's like a play on, instead of it being, I'm trying to think of the New York Times and the other one that's there. But anyways, they mix them up. And so you think it's the illegitimate one, but it's actually some fake. And they really did publish the article. It's really there.
You know what? It's funny you say that because somebody in our network just posted that they got on US Business News or something, like whatever it was, US Business News or something inside our bureau, actually, that you're a part of. And but when I went to the site, it was like the US News or something like that, but it wasn't the same. And then I was just pitched, and I think it's a legit thing, and I actually think the magazine's legit. But again, to your point, there's two different versions. So there's, what is it, LA Magazine, I think, is the bigger one. And then there's like Los Angeles Magazine. And so I had somebody pitch me and say, be on the cover of Los Angeles Magazine. And this person that pitched me is the PR person, and they bought the space. But to be honest with you, I still don't know how they're doing it for $300. So I'm wondering if it's a different Los Angeles Magazine than even that one. And so I don't know what it is. And I told the person, I want to jump on a Zoom call, because I want to understand this more. And also I say, I have people that I could probably refer you to, but I need to know how, I need to get on a Zoom call. And they were just trying to get me to do everything with WhatsApp. Here's the link to pay. And I'm like, no, you got to slow down. I did look at them and see on LinkedIn and other places, the person seems to have been doing this for like 20 years. They seem legit, but it really concerned me at first that it was positioned in like, do you want to be on the top or a top magazine in LA? Like their wording was all kind of making you think it was LA Magazine. And then, like I said, this other one was like, I was in the US Business News. And people, you were in USA Today or US News or so you're right. I mean, you gotta be careful. So I'm glad you shared that story. Because somebody else may learn from that too, right? Like have that experience. So as we wind down, I wanted to ask you, I always have two questions I ask every guest. First one is called the passenger question. And that's because we may air a clip of this on our passenger show. So the passenger question quite easily is, if you were sitting next to a stranger on a plane and they leaned over and said, hey, I need some life advice, what do you got? What kind of life advice do you think you might give them? And by the way, you probably know this, but this is a question that inspired the book, actually, vice versa. The book that we're putting out called The Enlightened Passenger inspired this question and ultimately inspired a show around this. So just the idea of strangers on a plane and what they would tell each other. So what would you tell a stranger in a plane that asked you for life advice?
The missing piece is always action. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. That's how you help other people. So that would be my simple advice.
I love it. That's brief and simple. I love it. It's easy. Second question is the bigger one, the one I ask everybody, the time machine question. And so the time machine question is kind of like what it sounds like, Julie. It's if you could jump into a time machine, go back and talk to your younger self, give her some life advice based on what you've learned in the years since. What do you think you might tell her?
Well, I don't want to spoil the time continuum because then I might not end up where I am.
You know what? I don't want to interject in your question, but I will say that is realistically the most common answer I get from a lot of influencers is they wouldn't even give any advice, or they wouldn't go back in the time machine, or if they did go back, they'd be just like, hey, have a good life, and say nothing because they're scared they would disrupt, if we believe in the butterfly effect, disrupt everything that happens after that. And so honestly, what's really fascinating to me is how many of those same people when they were younger, maybe 18 or 20, would wish away everything happening and miserable and unhappy about stuff and all this, that now say they wouldn't go back and help that person avoid all that because they realize it was necessary. So part of my hope is that by me sharing that is people learn at 18 to just get rid of it now. Like if it's not going to matter in 10 years or 20 years or 5 years or 3 years, why are you losing tomorrow over it? So anyway, I didn't mean to interject, but I want to say you're in good company because most people wouldn't go back.
Yeah, I think if there was anything I would say is all the things are happening for you, not to you. And you know, I think because that's the mantra I play in my head whenever something goes wrong is that, and or the Chinese farmer. Do you know the Chinese farmer story? It's one of my
Oh, I know.
favorites. I'll do it real quick. So the Chinese farmer, you know, he has a horse, and the horse runs away, and his friend says, "Oh, bad luck." And he goes, "Maybe." Next day, horse comes back, brings three wild stallions with it. Friend goes, "What good luck! Now you have four horses." Farmer goes, "Maybe." And then the next day, his son is trying to tame one of those wild horses, falls off, breaks his leg. And friend says, "Oh, I'm so sorry. That's horrible luck." Farmer says, "Maybe." And then the day after that, the army comes to take the son away to go to the army, but he can't because he's got a broken leg. So I every time something bad is happening or even something really good, I always think, well, there's going to be a lesson in this.
You know what's so I love that. I have heard the story. I forgot it. I didn't know which one you were meaning, and I love the story. Like I said, it makes me think, and I don't remember the full context of it, so I shouldn't probably even speak on it because it was my wife who shared it. But Wayne Dyer did something along those lines. He was sharing in a we watched listened to an audio one time when we were traveling across two countries, and he talked about how in Hawaii, in Maui, people come up and say, "Oh my God, this is such a lovely place. People are so friendly." He said, "Yeah, we have that here." And then somebody else came up and said, you know, next day, what a terrible place that, you know, this sucks. And you could have a hurricane at any moment or whatever. And he goes, yeah, we have that here. Anyway, it was one of those things. And it was just like, and I can't remember the ending of it, but it's probably similar. It was probably really Wayne Dyer's version of that story. But I just remember the whole idea of him kind of saying, whatever you think is happening, that's your perspective of it. So he was saying, if your perception is we're a clean, healthy place, then we are. If your perception is we're not, then we're not. But it's whatever you believe. So I think his takeaway was he was basically saying, I'm not going to try to change your mind. If you believe it to be true, it's true. But I always thought, again, I don't remember the full story, but I love both of those stories.
So yeah, that's the only advice I'd give myself is, you know, this is happening for you, not to you. And if you kind of embrace that, good things will come.
Amazing. So my last official question, and then I just have an unofficial question. But the last official question is, and it's again, I guess this one is, more so because of the book side again. I guess I focused on that today. I know we'll do another interview and I'll focus on something else, but since I'm on that theme, I want to ask you, and I know this is a big question to ask. You know, you don't have to use three, but I'm going to ask you if you could name the three things that you see that work best for book authors in actually moving books, are there things that come to mind?
Yeah, absolutely. One is having a really clear reader, like a reader that you are solving a problem for or that you've really written that book for, not just like women ages of 40 to 60, but like down to that specific problem. The next thing is your network, you know, getting other people to sell the book to the people in their audience. That is a game changer for all authors, because your network only reaches so far. And then the third thing is just keep going, right? Do one thing every single day. And, you know, as long as you want to promote your book, just keep doing one thing every single day and it will compound over time.
I love that because it makes me think of, have you ever heard of Jack Canfield, Mark Victor Hansen's The Rule of Five? So, I mean, they did five things every day. And there was two of them, which makes it easier because then you can do 10 things a day. But they did five things every day to move the needle of the book, Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And some days they said it could be going on the tiniest little radio station nobody's ever heard of. That could be one of the things. Another thing literally could be just sending a copy to someone. Like, in other words, it's not, doesn't have to be earth-shattering things, but they just did one or five things every day. And the end result is the biggest, I mean, biggest selling, what would you call it? Short story, nonfiction series of all time, I think. 600 million copies sold. Now, they didn't do all of that, but you know my point, like five things a day was what moved the needle. And I forget which one of them told me. One of the two of them told me one of those things out of the five was they sent a copy of the book to all the jurors on the O.J. Simpson trial. I don't know if you know that story, but they sent a copy and they got permission from Judge Ito to let them read the book. So it was the only book they read the whole time they were there. And the day they read the verdict, they all came out holding their copy of the book while they're talking to the
No
media,
way.
saying, "What's this book? What's that book?" "Oh, and Mark Victor Hansen, Jack Canfield sent us some and they signed them for us." And they had sent it to Judge Ito too. So maybe he liked the book, which is why he allowed it. But Mark, I know this part, Mark told me, he said, "Corey, that was the biggest advertising we ever got for that series in our life." And he said it was only one of the five on that day. So you never know. So Julie, this has been an absolute pleasure. I just want to know how we can learn more. If people want to connect with you, they want to work with you, they want to tap into all this knowledge you have around books, where would you send them?
Well, normally I would send them to booklaunchers.com, but we talked so much about book promotion. If people want to download a free copy of my book, Self Promote and Succeed, they can go to selfpromoteandsucceed.com/audio. and that will get them the ability to download it for free, which cover is like 85,000 words on you won't run out of one thing to do every day to market your book if you go there.
Amazing. Well, it's perfect timing for me, so I'm going to go check it out myself.
There you go.
So, Julie Broad, this has been an absolute pleasure. Like I say, with your permission, I'll call it a to be continued and say till next time, if that works for you.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Grab your copy of The Enlightened Passenger and the bonuses at thisisthebook.com.